I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Big Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Thursday, January 30th, very special episode planned for today. We're going to get the perspective from a couple of radio guys that are close to both the Chiefs and the 49ers. Actually, in reverse order, because first we chatted with Joe Fortenbaugh of 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. Good friend of mine, Joe Fortenbaugh. We also talked about Phish, the band. If you want to hear that. Then super friend Sean Wagner McGuff spreads his interview wings, actually contributes to the podcast for once, by chatting up Bob Fesco of 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. That's followed by a slew of great interviews from our CBS Sports HQ set on Radio Row. These are big names, headliner names. Debo booked them all. We chatted with Saquon Barkley, Arthur Blank, the Falcons owner, the Griffin brothers, Shaquem and Shaquille, Jamal Adams and Tariq Cohen. It's going to be a killer episode. Get you ready for Super Bowl. Friday's the big pick show, so make sure to download, subscribe, rate, and review. Enjoy the show, everybody. All right, as mentioned, we're going to do team-by-team breakdowns of the Super Bowl. So to do so, good buddy, longtime friend, Joe Fortenbaugh, 957 The Game, fellow Phish fan. You're open about your Phish fanhood, right?
I am, and I'm quite excited because Summer Tour was just released.
They're not coming to North Carolina. I'm furious.
I know. I would be too, but every other year they come west, so this is my year. They're coming west.
There you go.
They're playing Harvey's, which is one of my all-time favorites. It's my wife's first shows, the Tahoe Tweezer from like 7 years ago was her first shows.
See, legit Phish fan.
Yeah.
They're more than one.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And then they're going to go to L.A. and come up to San Francisco. Now, usually at San Francisco, they play Bill Graham,
right.
Which is about 2 miles from where I live, 2.5.
Yeah.
So that I thought I would never get closer to living close to a Phish show. This time they're playing Chase Center, which is the Warriors' new building, which is 2 blocks.
Whoa!
So like,
you live two. So you're.
I'm
you
right
a
in
two
between
block walk
the
to
Giants
show.
And the Warriors. So I am 2 blocks
that is
from
the
show.
That's the dream scenario.
I wondered that though. Is it? I always like going to Dick's and kind of being on location.
That's true.
Tailgate from my apartment with my kids running around.
That's true. Well, so like in 99. It's 99 because it was my freshman year at college. They played Reynolds Coliseum on NC State's campus, so like me and my buddy drove back. He was back from college at Richmond. We drove back from High Point to Raleigh.
This is the end of 1.0. So this
If you can find the show, it is fire. They annihilated. They played like a Killer Chalks, I think, and they played like a Camel Walk in there anyway. But like we parked at my dorm. And walked through campus to go see Phish, which is just ridiculous.
Speaking of the comment you made earlier, real quick. So I saw you guys yesterday and we scheduled this and I'm like, this is perfect. And I was thinking about this later at night. You're like one of the first people I met in media. First time we met, and I knew you before this, but the first time we met face to face was Indianapolis. If you remember in that bar. Freeman, Prisco. Hotel bar.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the Giants.
The JW Marriott.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, there's a lot of people you meet because you and I are like the same age.
Yeah.
Got married around the same time, kids at the same time. And you look around and some people continue the wave and so many have dropped out.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, 10, 12 years later, Brinson and I are still standing.
Yeah, it's crazy. But like if you look at like.
I just jinxed it. We're finished.
Right. This is my final Super Bowl. I know. But like if you look around at like the media and like what's like what like it's we're like old like guys now. It's crazy. Like I don't know how it happened.
Like we were like the first guys on to like 2008-09 when Twitter came out. It's like we're trying to optimize that, trying to make a name for ourselves. Yep. Like you were still writing blogs where people still go read websites, but all your news, Schefter's not breaking it on websites anymore.
Right, right. I mean, no, just go right to the account. It's like Twitter. Yeah. And like, but like we were, I think at one point my boss made me, I was like, I need a promotion. He's like, you know what? This guy's whining about his promotion enough. And EK, my boss, is still here. He still runs podcasts. Debo reports directly to him. But he's like, fine, I'll make you a senior NFL blogger. And I was like, okay, I'll take it. He's like, you're not getting more, I don't think you give me more money, but it's like a running joke at the office. It's like, I'm a senior.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Senior looks good. It's like, this guy's really been around. He's been in the trenches.
Right. But they're like, what the F is a senior NFL blogger? Like, that's like, what a clown show.
You created the profession.
Exactly. So there we go. We blogged our faces off. All right. Anyway, let's dive into this game. So you're out in the heart of it. Like you point out, like you're two blocks from the Warriors. We talked about this a little bit, just before we started doing the show. What is the vibe with 49ers fans? Are they coming out of the woodwork, bandwagoning, et cetera? Like every fan base does. But like, has this been a team that, like, because people were ripping, like, they're like, they don't even fill out, like, they don't even sell out the stadium when they're winning. Like, is this a team that has legitimate support out there? Is it interest?
But it's very, very unique, especially for me, because I'm from the East Coast, right? So I grew up an hour from Philadelphia. So you live and die with everything. Like, T.O. might be coming to the Eagles. You're not working.
You're
tracking PFT. You're doing whatever you need to do to find out if T.O.'s coming to those Eagles. It means the world to you.
I mean, you guys have live trackers for has Ben Simmons made a three yet?
Yes, or
like,
you know, exactly. Like, it's crazy, but I think that also goes hand in hand with weather, because when you're not outdoors at all in the winter, you got nothing to do. Football's going to mean the world to you. So now I'm living in San Francisco where an Eric Davis, former Niner quarterback, he's got this great line for all the young guys who move there. And he's like, you got to realize people have better expletive to do.
Sure.
That's why you don't, because college football is nothing out there.
Yeah.
You're in the heart of it. I'm a Big Ten guy. College football doesn't even register. Like we never talk about it.
Like our Saturdays, like it's like, where is the tailgate? Like my wife's like, you don't cover college football. Like, what are you doing? Like why are you spending your Saturday away from your family at these football games? And like out there, it's like,
exactly. So then there's an interesting dynamics with the fact that this team was good. They leave Candlestick, which is an iconic venue. It's like Veterans Stadium. It's like the Meadowlands, all that stuff. And when they leave, they don't stay close. They go an hour south to Santa Clara.
Yeah, we were there for Super Bowl. It sucks.
Right. So now this is seen as a big slap in the face to all these diehard fans that you're still the Niners. And every time you play on Monday or Sunday, they show the Golden Gate Bridge and Alcatraz and all that. But it's not that.
It's not Santa Clara. It's not even,
Right. So now you got fans who are pissed off. Then, right when you get into the stadium, the team goes in the crapper, so it's a bad product, and half the stadium sits in this glaring heat for a big portion of the year. So people had problems with everything. They're just very angry. But this year, when it turned around, everything changed. You stopped hearing about the heat. You stopped hearing about whether or not there were going to be big swaths of empty seats. The Browns game on Monday night changed it, because they opened with two road games. They're at Tampa, at Cincy, won them both. So people are getting excited.
And they were looking good.
Yeah,
like the defense is popping. Shanahan's got the run game going.
They survived the Pittsburgh game playing awful. And then they get the bye, and then they host Baker Mayfield on Monday night, which before the season started, it's like, man, that might be the real litmus test.
What was the spread of that game?
Oh, it was, I think, Niners minus -1.
Right, exactly.
The Niners were actually a dog
to the
on
Bengals.
The look ahead.
No, the Bengals, they were dogs.
They were
dogs
to the Bengals. They were dogs, like, to the Bucks, too.
In hindsight, is insane. But, like, that tells you, like, what we thought of this team coming into the season. They had the number 2 overall pick.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, all right, they're a 1-point home favorite against the freaking Browns, and they thrash them.
First play of the game, I mean,
pick 6, right?
There was one touchdown. There was one first down.
I was at a concert. I skipped,
to Odell
that was
Beckham.
When I skipped the podcast. I was at seeing Luna, the band Luna.
It was good?
Yeah, it was great.
I'll have to write that one down. We clearly have
you're old school.
Taste.
Yeah. You should check it out.
But yeah, they won that game. Breida on the first offensive play for the Niners.
That's right. Jailbreak.
Some yards for the touchdown. Right. They blew them out, and now everyone was like, okay, maybe this team's legit. But at every turn, because we're not used to them being good, is Garoppolo legit? Well, you haven't really played anybody. And then there was the swing where they hammer Green Bay. They play really well at Baltimore but come up short. Then they go to New Orleans and get the win, and people are buying in. So it turned. The place is loud. It's packed. It's back. But it's a unique atmosphere. You got to remember, it's a tech city. So in Philly, in New York, in Baltimore, Boston, people are walking around in the gear all season.
Yeah, people.
You don't see as much of that in San Francisco. It's very different.
That's
very
fair.
Different.
All right, how do you think the fans will show out in Miami? Will they show out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's a wealthy fan base.
Sure.
So you're going to have a ton of Silicon Valley coming in to pay these prices.
Okay.
The real question is.
But like, so like, you know about the Philly thing? Like, were you there in Minnesota?
I was not. There's a whole story to that. It's not a good story because, you know, that was, but I got the win regardless.
Right, you got, yeah, yeah.
That's the team. So. Yeah,
well, I just didn't know. Me and Breach did a lap around the stadium beforehand. And like, I was telling this on the podcast the other day, like, I have never been in an environment like that. Like, you could sense.
For a Super Bowl.
For a Super Bowl.
I've covered 10 of them.
No, but I'm saying, like, I always do a lap like an hour before the game. And usually it's like fans are walking around and getting a little loose and like having drinks. And like, this was like, it was all Eagles fans. And they were just like, ravenous, and they knew it was at stake, and they knew what they had to do.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you could like feel it. It was like terrifying, but like, I didn't feel in danger, but it was like terrifying. And like we're not going to get that from Niners fans.
I don't think it's going to feel like that, but yeah. You are going to get a really nice crowd for this game. I think it's going to be tough in the sense that the Chiefs are coming in full force too. You haven't been to a Super Bowl in 50 years.
I think the Chiefs will be closer to the Eagles. Chiefs fans will be closer to Eagles fans. I don't think like Niners fans will be like Patriots fans or anything like that, but I just don't know. Like, that's just my guess, my educated guess.
No, I think it's a pretty good guess. I think it's a pretty good guess.
Like, I mean, like, I'm a redneck, so I can call Chiefs fans rednecks. They're like a bunch of like Midwestern rednecks who are like amped up at the idea of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid finally win, like, win, you know, the Chiefs finally getting one.
And I work with Lorenzo Neal, who spent a lot of years with the Chargers in San Diego.
Sure.
To this day, he will always tell you of all the places he's played,
Arrowhead.
He's played Tennessee, he's played Baltimore. Arrowhead always ranks at the top. He said you would pull into that stadium and the road is just lined with Chiefs fans. They're going crazy.
But they're like 6 a.m.
Yes. But he's always would say they're great people. It's not like they're throwing batteries like some unnamed fan bases, things of that nature. But he would always say they would yell and scream and the national anthem and the home of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
He always brings that up. I think that you're going to see, I mean, it's all red. It's the first ever all red Super Bowl. Two teams with primarily wear red. So the place is going to look fantastic.
Yeah.
If I had to project, I think I put it right near 50-50. It's a terrible answer, but these are two fan bases. One is wealthy, and the other one, you know, they're going to have their wealthy come. But the Chiefs, just when you've gone this long without a Super Bowl and people love the team like that, you're coming.
The Chiefs fans are going to uncork like home equity lines.
Yeah.
You know, the 49ers fans are just going to like drop like whatever.
Cash in
like,
some of their Twitter
stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. What do you think about this game? Do you think
I love this game.
So, Joe, to me, it's weird because it's a great game.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome offensive-defensive matchup. And I think football fans, hardcore football fans, will love it. I don't know that it, like, has the pop and sizzle of previous Super Bowls, though.
Okay, so I've been trying to wrestle with that, too. New England's out. What does that mean? What does it mean when New England's out? Because it's been 3 years of the Patriots. Everyone always wants to say, I'm sick of the Patriots. But, like,
This is my 10th Super Bowl, and 5 of them have been the Patriots.
Yeah.
And they're almost always good Super Bowls. Even the Rams, which was a bad game, was a close game and, like, an entertaining game. So, like, to me, it's people trying to fill the void. Like, we don't know. We're living in this post-Patriots world.
Do you like the idea of it not being a Patriots
Super
Bowl? Yes,
I love it.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't know what to do without the Patriots here.
Yeah. I think it opens up a whole world of Patriots Super Bowls force you to make a choice. You're either a Patriot fan or you hate the Patriots.
Yeah.
That's how it works. It's like with the Yankees, it's like with Notre Dame. Now, if you come into this one and you're not a fan of either fan base, it's kind of like, ooh, do I like the Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid angle?
Yeah.
Do I hate Tyreek Hill and I want to root against him? Do I want to back the Niners because Garoppolo? So, I mean, Garoppolo stands to gain so much this week. Once the world gets a look at that face, I'm telling you, I know it sounds crazy, but he goes out and plays well.
All right, so wait, when is this podcast airing? I don't know. So this is Thursday's show. But like we're recording this.
Welcome to Thursday. We're speaking to you in the past.
We've always do it in the future. It's very bizarre. But so we're recording this like Wednesday at 1:15, right?
Yeah.
Eastern time. Like, shouldn't the world have already seen Jimmy G?
You would think. Like, we've talked about it forever.
Like to me, these are two superstar quarterbacks. Even if Jimmy G's not like a elite franchise level guy right now, like these like two like Mahomes is like they're both different handsome. Like Jimmy G is stunning. Like dates, you know, film stars.
Those who are in show business.
Right, show business. But like Mahomes is like the reigning MVP. It doesn't feel like the quarterbacks are getting the same pop. I don't know why.
If you took either guy and put him in Baker Mayfield's commercials, it'd be a completely different
story.
Maybe
that's true.
We see Mayfield all year long outside of, like, I gotta remove myself because I see Garoppolo every day, but where's Garoppolo if you're in a situation where you're watching on TV. You might see him for primetime, but where else do people see Garoppolo?
That's fair.
And where else do people see Mahomes? He's now in that one commercial where he's pouring the ketchup all over the stadium. People might not recognize or know because he went to Texas Tech, too.
My wife wouldn't know who Patrick Mahomes is, I don't
think. And she's around you all day where you're talking about this nonstop. So.
She might be like, is that the handsome backup from Tom Brady? But she wouldn't be, if I was like Jimmy Garoppolo, she'd be like, okay, sure, whatever, you know?
This is gonna be so big because you know this as well as anyone. Every year, there's an announcement months before the Super Bowl as to who the Super Bowl halftime act is.
Yeah.
And every year, diehard NFL fan loses his mind because it's not geared towards him.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area, I was living there, everyone outraged it was not Metallica. How could they not go to Metallica? Metallica plays their own show
Atlanta,
at AT&T.
It's like, why could they not do Ludacris? It's like, because you can't do Ludacris.
It's very obvious because all of us, diehard meathead, is watching that game no matter who's the halftime show.
Right.
They want to appeal to the people at the Super Bowl party who might not care about the game.
Yep.
Welcome to Justin Timberlake and Shakira and J-Lo.
Sure.
Right? So that's what you got. The Garoppolo getting exposed on that level, like once they start showing him, that's going to gain attention.
Okay.
Especially if it's a big game and they plaster him everywhere. The guy's personality is killer. Like he's meant to be the guy.
For sure.
It just needs that big
and
game.
And maybe it'll ramp up as the weekend goes along too for like the casual fans. So that's a good point. All right. What do you think about this game and how do you see it playing out?
I love the contrast in styles that we're going to have here. The one thing that I keep coming back to is I think there's a little bit of recency bias with what we've watched in the playoffs. I think with the Chiefs, you have a lot of people who are very excited because of what they just did to Houston and Tennessee.
Yep.
We don't see comebacks like that against Houston. And then to do it again against Tennessee, we love offense. We're all wired and predisposed to be fans of scoring, offense, and quarterbacks. And that's what they deliver.
This is what I'm worried about, too.
Right. So everyone's very excited about that. Then you look at the Niners. It's like, well, Garoppolo only threw 27 passes. The guy can't hack it. Well, all these takes this week about, can Garoppolo hang in a shootout? Go watch the Saints game. Like, yes, he's done it. So I think there are these people that we knew the Chiefs were good because we saw them in the AFC Championship last year. We predicted them to be good because a lot of us thought they were going to the Super Bowl this year. They're going to be close, so that's two. And then they went out and they played well and they put up big numbers. Niners weren't really supposed to be here, so everyone's kind of a little cautious. That's why I think there's a little bit of value on the Niners. Remember, Green Bay was 14-3, and then all of a sudden everyone thought they were crap.
Yeah.
The Vikings had just beaten the Saints, but then all of a sudden they were crap.
Yeah.
Not good teams make you look like crap. They can play defense, they can run, they can throw, and here's the thing. If you're Steve Spagnuolo, I'll ask you this, what are you game planning for? They just ran the ball 87 times in 2 weeks. They crushed two teams only running the ball. Do you sell out to stop the run? Because if you do, Garoppolo is going to have his choice to throw all over the field.
And he has weapons. Like the weapons are there. Like
Debo Samuel, you're a Carolina guy.
Yeah.
I know you're not South Carolina, but
Debo Samuel did a one-handed catch against NC State in the end zone his next to last year. Yeah, I saw.
Knew you'd have one frame there.
When he caught it, I was like, that guy should be a first-round pick. And that was a year. But I think he got injured his junior year right before that.
Yeah, a little back.
Debo's a stud. Yeah, and like they. And Ardebo is a stud too, but
it's a good name. It's a really good name. Every Debo I come across, Friday, you, Debo Samuel. It's a pretty nice name.
And like George Kittle's a monster. You don't think the 49ers can blow out the Chiefs, do you?
I don't think there's an outcome that would totally floor me. But either team pulling off a blowout, it kind of would.
I could see the Chiefs blowing out the 49ers if only because they get them completely out of game script, and Jimmy G has to throw 40 times.
Exactly.
Like, that could turn into a blowout, I think, because the secondary for the Chiefs is better than people think. I don't see a way that the 49ers pull off what the Seahawks did to the Broncos.
Are the Chiefs capable of being blown out when you have that offense?
I don't think so.
I don't think you can be blown out.
Because even like the Broncos that year against the Seahawks, and the Seahawks were a better defense than the 49ers. I mean, we agree, right? The Legion of Boom in 2013.
I went through some of the numbers. It's closer than people think, but yes, it's still Seattle.
Seattle. But like, that Broncos team was not built to fire over top of you.
And their defense sucked. That was before they revamped everything.
100%.
They averaged 38 points in 460 yards a game.
Yep.
And they were completely off the plan on the first play after the safety.
Yep, exactly. But the Chiefs, if they're down, they're like, all right, we're going to throw 40 shot plays to Tyreek Hill, and three of them are going to hit. And they'll work their way back into it, I think.
So look at their losses this year. They lose, 19-13 to the Colts, when the Colts ate up almost 40 minutes and ran the ball, not a blowout. They lost the following week to Houston by a touchdown.
Same deal.
It was very similar. They lost the Green Bay game, which was close, but that was Matt Moore, so we'll throw it out. But still close, with Matt Moore. And then the fourth one was the Tennessee game, which came down to the wire. Yep. Right? They missed.
That was a wild, crazy game with multiple comebacks.
They do not strike me as a team. And you know what? The Niners are the same way, their three losses were all competitive losses. So yeah. I don't see neither the Chiefs do not strike me as a team capable.
So you're going 49ers in a close game.
I do like the Niners. I like what the defense brings. I like the fact that what they need to do to win is what they've been doing all year.
Okay.
They can run the ball. You can pick 5 or 6 yards up at a clip. You control the clock. They were fourth
in
time
under
possession.
Too, then.
Well, okay, so we talked about that today. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to have to bet it because I'm a degenerate. I'm going to have to have action on everything. I do not know which direction I want to go with that. Do you want to bet an under against the Chiefs and watch them rattle off 21 and a quarter?
Nope.
And the Niners could score two. But do you want to play the over with everyone on earth and then watch these teams come out and feel each other out?
And if you get a slow first quarter and or a 49ers lead, it's going under.
Live bet might be the way to do it. It might just be a live bet. Wait to see how the flow, second half over, maybe.
Yeah, live bet, yeah.
Wait to see how the flow plays out and then get involved. That might be actually the
right
move.
Because we're going to get points.
Yes.
So, like, if you can get a slow first quarter and then you can hit the over, or a fast first quarter, then you hit the under, I think one of those two things can work out.
Traditionally, I think the Super Bowl, they always stack the odds, which will be the higher scoring half. Second half is always juiced.
So you got to figure history dictates that. All right, we got to get out of here. Great stuff. Joe Fortenbaugh, multiple time. Podcast guest.
I love this. This is always so easy. You are very charismatic. It's easy to speak with you.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating, so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads, so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Sean, your favorite super friend of the Pick Six podcast, joined right now by Bob Vesco, 610 Sports Radio, Kansas City. Bob, thanks for joining us.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me on.
So how's your Super Bowl week been? We're talking on today's Tuesday, Devo? Wednesday.
Wow,
I know. It's only been 3 days.
The week's going so fast already, huh?
And the Chiefs have very early media sessions this week. 8 a.m. Requires getting on the media bus at 6 a.m. What are your vibes so far of the team? And is it any different than you would say the previous 4 months of the year?
Well, I mean, you're complaining about a 6 a.m. wake-up call. My goodness, we're up at 3:45. So, you know, you get to sleep an extra, like, 3 hours compared to what we're doing. But it's been great. I mean, this is our first time, you know, covering our team in the Super Bowl. We've done Super Bowls before, but nothing like this, nothing to this magnitude where we're actually here because our team is here. And it's been really, really cool, and it's been great for the city, and it's been great for us, man. It's been a lot of fun.
So something that's been kind of frustrating for me as, like, a national writer is that at these media sessions, like, the Chiefs players aren't really giving you much, like, and I think that's by design. I actually think the 49ers, by comparison, seem a little bit looser. The Chiefs seem just really focused, and they're not really giving anything, or like they had multiple chances on opening night, to take some shots at Richard Sherman if they wanted to, and it was nothing but, you know, Tyreek Hill, I can't wait to go up against him. I mean, do you agree about that?
That's the way they've always been. I mean, that's kind of the mindset their head coach has. He doesn't take any shots. He's very vanilla. And this is an organization that, you know, kind of prides itself that way. They're not going to create any waves. They're not going to say anything kind of out of the ordinary to get themselves in trouble to create that bulletin board material. Every once in a while, they'll say something. I think a couple of weeks ago, Tyreek Hill said, nobody can cover us in the NFL. He was right about that. Nobody covered them in the NFL. And then Frank Clark has got some beef with D Ford for whatever reason, and they didn't ever even play together in Kansas City. So we've got that going on. But yeah, but for the most part, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are giving you a good kind of cliched quote every chance they get.
Do you get the sense that Andy Reid maybe feels, I guess, for his second Super Bowl, and he's been around for as long as he he has. Do you think there's added pressure for him to win this one, or do you think he's actually more relaxed because he has been around for so long?
Who are you saying the pressure from? From himself or from, like, people nationally? Or like
because from himself.
I don't think from himself at all. Like, I think Andy Reid just likes to coach football, and this is just another game. I mean, this is just another opportunity for him to go out there and coach football. Obviously, he knows the magnitude of this game, but I don't think he puts pressure on himself. I think he genuinely is just a guy who likes to design plays, likes to create plays, likes to put people in position to be successful, and I think he's looking at this is like, man, we get another opportunity to go out and do this. This is fun.
Do you then think he finds, like, the whole media hoopla of all of this week frustrating? Like, he actually reminds me in a way, like, both him and Bill Belichick, they're not going to, again, give you that much bulletin board material. The difference, I think, is that when Belichick does it, it looks like he's having open-heart surgery, right? It looks right. He looks pained about doing it. Reed looks like he's on vacation every time he's talking. I mean, do you think he doesn't like the hoopla, though, how he has to speak every single day leading up to the game?
Well, I think probably, but, you know, he understands what it's about. I mean, the Super Bowl is such a different beast. Everybody's got to speak every day, and you got to answer the same questions over and over and over again. And it's not like it's a long period of time. I mean, what is it, an hour max a day that they have to do that? And then they go about their business, and they go about and practice, and he's getting it out of the way first thing of the day, so it's nothing that he has to, you know, sit around and stress about. But, you know, I think ultimately none of these coaches and players would want to talk to the media. I think the media kind of did a hatchet job on what Frank Clark said yesterday. I don't think he was taking shots at D Ford. Everybody made it out to say, oh, this guy's taking shots at D Ford. And you go back and listen to it, you're like, no, he's just saying what the truth is. Like, that penalty by D Ford last year was a dumb penalty.
And D Ford has agreed that, yes, you can't line up offsides like that.
And
last year, D Ford was saying the same thing about what Andy Reid was telling him to get over that.
Yeah.
Look, everyone nationally, whether it's a Super Bowl playoff, pays attention to Patrick Mahomes. He's just like Andy Reid, though. Like, he seems really cool. He's a cool customer. He's not really giving anything. What have your impressions been covering Mahomes every single week? Is he any different this week than he has been the previous?
No, and that's what makes him so special. He's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen play, and I've talked to a lot of people already this week, former quarterbacks, former players, and I said, this is the way I feel. I think he's the best quarterback that I've ever seen, and not one person's disagreed. I mean, the kid is smart. He doesn't make mistakes. He can beat you with his arm, but where he's really crushing people now is with his legs, and I'm not just talking about that 27-yard run. I'm talking 3rd and 9 getting 10. I'm talking 3rd and 4 getting 7, like creating the opportunity to extend drives and just really stab the opponent in the back and just, you know, leave him kind of there on the field. Like, he has the ability to do that. He's beating you all sorts of ways, and he'll never put his team in a position to lose. And so he's been the same. He's cut from the Andy Reid cloth. They're like perfect for each other. It's almost like a father son. He's mimicking his dad. Whatever the dad says to do, he's going out there and he's doing that. It's been a great relationship, and it's been so much fun for us to watch.
I've never heard that comparison, but now I'm stealing it, the father son thing.
Yeah.
One thing that surprised me this week. Well, I don't know. We're national writers. We like to steal from beat writers all the time.
That is true.
The Chiefs defense, you know, I think they're better than the perception throughout the whole year. They really started peaking after midseason. What struck me is that they are very confident, talking to Reggie Ragland, Tyrann Mathieu. What are your impressions of watching this Chiefs defense gain that confidence over the course of the season? Well, it seems like they're peaking right now.
Yeah, they are, and I'm not surprised by it because I told everybody this is what was going to happen when they hired Steve Spagnuolo. I'm a Giants fan, and so I watched that team in 2007 start out very, very bad, give up 80 points in their first two games of the season, and it looked like, oh my goodness, this is going to be a terrible hire. What did they do with the Steve Spagnuolo? And then week 3, they made a big stop on 4th and goal against the Redskins, and they started to buy into that defense. And when they hired Steve Spagnuolo, I said that day, I said, we're not talking about this defense until at least October. We're not talking about how bad it is, how poor it is. We're not mentioning this defense until at least October. It's going to take time. And by midseason, they'll be playing better football. And by midseason, they started to play better football. Had a great performance against the Denver Broncos when Mahomes got injured, and it kind of just took off from there. They had a couple of downs, but more importantly, they were gaining confidence. They were believing in themselves, and they all bought into Spags' system. But Ty made a big statement himself when he said after the Houston game that they lost, if we don't get people to start buying in and doing what we're supposed to do, we're not going to get to where we need to get to. And that was a big statement by him, and they all bought into that. And this defense is doing exactly what I said it would be doing, and it's peaking right at the right time.
And speaking of Tyrann Mathieu, it seems like every time you talk to maybe not the stars on the defense, they always cite Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark in their leadership. How much has their addition, in addition to Spags, you think impacted this defense?
That's huge. You got to have those people inside the locker room believing what the coach is saying. If you don't have your leaders buying into and believing what the coach is saying, you're never going to be able to go out there and execute it. And Ty and Frank Clark have been huge leaders on this team. I mean, you can make the comparison that Ty Matthews had the effect on this defense from a leadership standpoint that Michael Strahan did on that Giants defense in 2007 when they held the New England Patriots to two touchdowns after an 18-0 start to that season. So they are doing everything identical to that Giants defense. They've got a great rotation on the defensive line, but without Ty Matthew, without Frank Clark being the vocal leaders and the leaders inside that locker room, they wouldn't be here. I said this morning on my show on 610 in Kansas City that if they did not have Tyrann Mathieu, this team would not be in the Super Bowl.
Do you think those leaders were missing last year?
Of course, yeah. I mean, there were faux leaders on this team. People thought Eric Berry was a leader. He was not a leader of this football team. Justin Houston was not a leader on this football team. They really haven't had a leader on the defensive side since Derek Johnson left a couple of years ago. And so they were lacking a leader. They didn't have anybody to kind of shepherd them through the tough times. And when you change defensive coordinators, you change schemes, you need veteran leaders that have done it in a successful way to be those leaders. And the Chiefs identified Ty Matthew and Frank Clark right away and went out and got them and brought them in here more so for their leadership abilities and then their play abilities.
You talk about leadership. At the 49ers media session, I think someone asked maybe George Kittle a question about how the 49ers coaching staff he thinks is going to go down as one of the all-time great coaching staff once all these people break off and get their own jobs. I actually think the Chiefs all-around coaching staff is a little bit underrated just because of how much attention Andy Reid gets.
Sure.
I mean, we talked about Spags. Dave Tobe. Has been an incredible special teams coordinator in this league for a long time. Do you think that gives the Chiefs an advantage, having all that experience on this?
Well, I think it all, yes, it obviously does. I think Spags is a Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator, knows what it takes to win in a big game. Obviously, Andy Reid's been around 20 years. He knows how to coach and win games. You've got Dave Tobe, who's been around and been in a Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears. He's got that. But I think Eric Bieniemy gets so overlooked when we talk about coaches in this league. I don't know what he does X's and O's wise, but I'll run through that wall for Eric Bieniemy, and he's not my coach. Like, he can motivate guys. He can take you to the next level, and he's probably going to be the guy on Saturday night when everything's, you know, taken care of and they're getting ready to wake up the next morning. He's probably going to deliver that speech to the team on Saturday night. This is what's in front of you. This is the opportunity that you have, and he's going to get that team fired up.
You cover the team every single day. Everyone nationally knows about Mahomes. They know about Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, Tyreek Hill. Who's a player in this game you think that maybe we don't pay attention to nationally enough that you think will impact it?
Mitchell Schwartz, right tackle for the Chiefs. I think he's the best right tackle in the game, and nobody ever talks about right tackles, first of all, but nobody ever talks about Mitchell Schwartz. He is unbelievable, and I think especially against the San Francisco defensive line, I think it's up to Mitchell Schwartz and the other guy on the other side, Eric Fisher, who's been playing like a beast since he came back into health mode, if you will. He's been awesome as well. So I think those two tackles are going to have a huge impact on this game.
We actually just did our all-decade team back a few weeks ago, and we did have Mitchell Schwartz as our right tackle there.
Very nice. That's a good call by you guys.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because you look at the 49ers defensive front, that front four, they blitz, I think, the fourth lowest in the league because they can get
pressure with that four.
Yeah. And if they can get to Mahomes, I feel like that's the only chance that they potentially have to slow him down.
If they can get to Mahomes with four, it could be a long day. But this guy still makes plays that you've never seen before. He'll do something on Sunday, and you'll go, I've never seen anything like that before. He's that amazing.
Because there's people who watch the Super Bowl who don't really like football, but they just watch it, right, for the commercials and all that. I'm really excited for them to see Patrick Mahomes if they have never watched Patrick Mahomes before.
We kind of talked about that earlier in the week. Like, he's going to be exposed to an entirely different audience, and people are going to see him for the first time. And if he goes out there and balls like everybody who watches football has seen him ball, his value is just going to climb higher and higher and higher off the field.
Bob, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate giving us insight on the Chiefs.
Thanks for having
me. Have a good rest of the week.
Yeah. You too.
I'm Will Brinson, John Breach, Ryan Wilson, and now joining us on the set, Saquon Barkley.
Thanks for having me.
One of the most exciting players in football. You are brought to us on behalf of Old Spice, as we can see.
Yes.
Old Spice Ultra Smooth, specifically the new Old Spice Ultra Smooth line designed for guys who want dermatologist-tested formulas and subtle scents without compromising performances. You can buy Old Spice Ultra Smooth in stores now. I am happy to promote Old Spice because I'm just an Old Spice guy. Like, I've just used Old Spice, but my dad used it. I've used it my whole life. I love Old Spice, and I don't mind telling the world.
I think you did a really good job of it. you said it best. Everyone loves Old Spice. Everyone grew up on Old Spice. That's something I've been using since I was a little kid. Everything you said, the dermatologist, Ultra Smooth, the new lines in stores right now, so you guys can go get that. And but here on Radio Row in Miami, obviously I wish I was playing the Super Bowl, but I get to spend a lot of quality time with you guys.
And I'll say, Brenton, I'm glad you use it because I've been walking around Miami with you. It's humid. You're sweating a lot.
It is very important.
You got to keep that stick nearby. We can't.
What if we just do 15 minutes? Like, we just completely ignore the producers and talk for 15 minutes about deodorant. And let's see if, like, they're like, what are these guys doing? He's not asking me any questions about Eli or Daniel Jones. So, like, pretty big year of transition in New York, right? I mean, Eli's gone. Incredible, you know, to see what was it like being a part of that? To have him come in when Daniel Jones gets injured and he gets to play, you know, the final games in front of that crowd. The crowd cheer him on and Coach Shermer pulls him out, and it just felt like a really special environment and something to be part of.
Yeah, we kind of assumed that Daniel Jones was coming back the week after that, and Miami was going to be the last chance Eli gets in front. The New York Giants fans, and you know, we wanted to send him out on a good note. I remember me and Shep right before the tunnel. We literally told each other, said, let's do it. Let's go try to do whatever we can to get to, you know, that last win in front of the whole crowd. And, you know, not only myself or in Shep, but the team, you know, we played at a high level. We were able to get the win. But just the moment when he came off the field, I remember I was one of the people to, you know, kind of greet him. And I remember just being on the sideline and having seen the fans chant his name saying, Eli, Eli, Eli. And, you know, you could see the how happy and, you know, the smile that it brought to Eli's face. And it's amazing to see a guy who gave a city so much for 16 years, and obviously it's sad to see him go, but you know, it's amazing to see how the fans reacted to him.
You can feel free to follow Daniel Jones.
I was going to go up with all the change. What's that been like for you this offseason? Because you have, you know, Pat Shermer's out, you know, Joe Judge. Have you got a chance to talk to him or meet him, and how do you feel?
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to Coach Judge over the phone and in person.
He's no nonsense.
He's going to be strict, but it's going to be a good strict. It's what we need, you know. He's going to be the guy that's going to come in here and set the standard. We're going to come together and make a common goal as a team. What we want to do as a team, and you heard him say it best. He's not a guy that's going to mess around. He wants guys who loves football, who cares about the sport, and who want to come in and win. And I love the fact that we have him, our coach, and I'm really excited. Obviously, I wish the season was right now, but we got to wait. We got to wait a couple more weeks before we even get to OTAs and to actually get under that system. And I just want to be able to open a playbook and get things rolling.
Well, let me ask you this real quick, right? Because you said I wish it was the season right now. You're running back. You take hits. You take a pounding all season. How does your body feel at the end of a football season? Like, are you beat up or are you really ready to roll now?
I mean, rookie year, I felt good going at the end of the year. And then this year I got banged up early in the year, so I was even healthy at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's not only that. I think you see what Derrick Henry kind of did towards the end of the year is we also take the pounding too, but we're delivering pounding too. Defenses and people got to tackle you consistently. And then especially in the playoff, I think you're seeing what the Titans was able to do and what the 49ers are doing. That's a big reason why they're in a championship. No, take nothing away from Jimmy G. He's an amazing player, but they have a great defense and they're able to run the ball. And, you know, that's why they're probably my pick to win a Super Bowl this year. Oh, so.
Volunteered a Super Bowl pick. We appreciate that. We had to drag it out of Jamal.
Didn't get it.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about a player playing this week. You played with him at Penn State, Anthony Zettel. I was introduced to Anthony Zettel on Monday night because he weighs, what, 250? 240?
I don't know. We were
258 as my back.
So he's 5'6". He gave Anthony Zettel a piggyback ride at the media night.
And I can't squat as much as you, so it was rough.
That's impressive, though. That's impressive.
Yeah. So tell us about the video that went viral when you guys were both at Penn State, where it looked like he was doing some Karate Kid stuff in the locker room, hit you with a water bottle with some crazy roundhouse kick. What happened there?
Yeah, he's a freak athlete. A lot of people don't know that. He's very freaky for his size and what he's able to do. And I guess he used to do like kickboxing and stuff like that. And we came. I don't know if it was like a practice or a workout. And you know, I'm in the locker room and he's on like the freshman side and he's doing kicks and stuff like that, and we're like, kick a water bottle, and I'm over there hyping him up, and he does a roundhouse kick, boom, and it literally just almost grazed my head. I kind of move at the last second.
But you went down, right?
Yeah, I went down, and it hit me, though. I went down just out of fear, like, oh, my God, and I think if he would have just put it a little bit to the left, definitely would have been concussed probably, and might have had to sit out a little bit for my freshman year, but other than that.
Did you feel like he came back a little too early from the ankle sprain? I mean, you got back quick, but it looked like, at least from afar, and you know your body better than anybody else, it looked like it took another maybe week or so when you got back for your full explosiveness to come back.
No, I don't think I came back too quick. I kind of re-injured the game I did came back. Came back on the sideline. But other than that, I don't think I came back too quick. I saw myself after the bye week and just watching film myself and, you know, just trying to be my biggest critic. I saw I was hesitant with stuff like that. So it wasn't that I wasn't physically able to do it. It was mentally being
like connecting about, the ankle to the brain.
Exactly. Well said. Connecting the ankle to the brain. And then once I, like, got done with that and got rid of that phase, I was able to get back to who I am. And, you know, we kind of got rolling a little bit at the end of the year. But now, you know, I'm ready to get in the offseason, grind and get better and try to prove my game and try to take to another level in year three.
How do you think – how can the Chiefs slow down the running game of the 49ers? Because it's so intricate in terms of what they do, like with the pulling the guards and the explosiveness of Raheem Mostert and all of that. What would – as a running back, what would you expect to see them try to pull off?
I mean, I feel like when I watch how defense attack me or defense attack other running backs, when they do a really good job, and when you see what the 49ers do on the opposite side, take away space. Space is the running back friend. You know, if you could take away space, put you in a better position to stop the running backs and stop the momentum. You got to get to them before they get going, and that means reestablishing.
Because they did that with Henry. Exactly. They got him before he got his legs turning, and he couldn't get going.
Exactly. So it's about reestablishing the line of scrimmage, and that's something that we preach on the offensive side of the ball with the offensive line. If you reestablish the line of scrimmage, the game's over. The running game's going to be ours all day. But so vice versa, they got to do the same thing. Reestablish the line of scrimmage. Stop before they get going. There's multiple running backs here that are very talented. And, you know, that's probably going to be helping put them in the best position.
Conversely, do you find that Patrick Mahomes is just, like, you're one of the dudes on the list that we like to watch? Like, in terms of, like, you got to watch every play because it's must-see TV, like when you rip off those long runs. Mahomes is the same. Like, you and Mahomes are the same boat, right? I mean, he's a guy that you just have to watch all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, he's very impressive. You know, he can make any throw. You've seen a no-look, the jump passes. but I like the passion he plays with. You know, he plays a lot of passion. He's a fiery dude. You can see him getting his team together on the sideline, especially they were down, like, what, 21, 24 points?
Yeah, 4-0.
And then to be able to.
By the way, Andy Reid didn't look nervous because he looked over and said, "Oh, that's Patrick Mahomes."
Exactly.
I got nothing to worry about.
So, you know, and he has a great core around him too. He has a great core around him too with a lot of special players. So, I know I said 49ers. It's going to be hard. It ain't going to be as easy as everyone think. But I do believe 49ers is going to pick it up, bring it out. But that boy that wears that helmet 1-5 is a very special player.
Is it based on the 49ers defense or the 49ers run game?
Both.
Okay.
Right. I think, like, at the end of the day, football's football. No matter what, if it's 1930 or if it's 2020, you got to be able to run the ball and you got to be able to play defense. And
That sounds like something Dave Gettleman would say.
Let me ask you a fantasy question real quick. You know, everybody takes you with their top pick all the time. When you're at a place like this, you see fans, you're around fans. How often do they walk up to you and they're like, "Hey, man, you won me Man League," or "You're on my fantasy team"? Do you get that a lot?
I get a lot. Last year, I won a lot of people their leagues, I guess you could say.
Where they send you their checks?
Yeah. This year, sure. I got hurt a little bit, so I probably disappointed a lot of people, but I picked it up towards the end of the year for them. But, yeah, I get that a lot. But you know.
Is that weird?
It's not weird. I think it's awesome. Obviously, I think it could be. I think we could find better ways that you can actually have the players interact and stuff like that. Also,
that's a good call.
But for me, like, I don't really pay too much attention to it. So I just, like, come off as like, "Thank you, I appreciate that." And but, like, I'm not doing it for your points. I'm trying to win some football games. But so I think there's probably got to be some cool creative way we can interact with that in different ways.
Well, the problem is people get on Twitter and they just like to – they're trying to, like, say things that they just don't need to be saying. You know what I mean? That's
Twitter.
Yeah,
That's everything.
That's Brinson.
That's Brinson.
I don't say the stuff to the guy.
Can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
I think we have to wrap because we're hard out. What were you going to ask? You asked it really fast.
One thing that you feel like you need to improve on, I think it's nothing, but going into the offseason, what are your goals?
Obviously, I'm a big critic of myself, so I try to prove everything. I try to enhance every part of my game, pass pro, catching the ball, understanding the game. I think this offseason, I asked Coach Franklin, I think he's going to allow me to come in. It's kind of like an intern. And I just want to see it from a coach's mindset, a coach's view, just to understand the game a little bit more. So that's probably going to be the biggest thing I want to do is understand the game more. Because when you're blessed with a lot of talent, you work hard for your talent. If you can just see the field at another level, it could take you to your game can go to another level.
Love it. Saquon Barkley, awesome time, man. Here for Old Spice. Make sure you buy Old Spice. It's fantastic. All right, joined here on CBS Sports HQ, Will Brinson, Pete Prisco, Falcons owner Arthur Blank. Thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. It's great to be here with you guys. You do a wonderful job supporting our league, and love watching your broadcast when I can.
Well, we appreciate it. And, you know, look, you had a fantastic close of the season. There's really no way to put it. It felt like midway through the year that there might be a lot of changes coming.
Right.
You decided to be patient with your organization and patient with your coaching staff, and you have to feel a lot of momentum going into 2020, right?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, I think give Coach Quinn a lot of credit. His self-awareness, his basic humility. He was able to look at, you know, things he had done in the first half of the year that needed to be changed. He brought in two new coordinators. That's a big, big step. He was calling signals himself. That was a big step. He also was trying to be involved on the defensive line, trying to help them and what have you. So he was doing too many things and spread too thin, I think. So unfortunately, it took us half the year to make the adjustments we had to make, and that's unfortunate. It's unnecessary, and I think he'd be the first to raise my hand and say, shouldn't have been that way. But he did make the changes, and the team performed, you know, dramatically differently. Second half of the year, 6-2, and we went from 31st in the league in defense to 8th, and we three important road wins against the Saints, which is always a hard place to play and win, against Carolina when they were still competitive, and then against one of the teams competing here, the 49ers, went to San Francisco and had success up there. So I'm hoping that's the side of the team that we're going to see coaching staff players lead into 2020. And with three picks in the first two rounds, I think we're in a good position in the draft to do that.
When you're an owner of a team and you're going through the tough times like you were going through early in the season, what are you like? How do you deal with that?
Well, I think you have to understand during a season as an owner what you can control and what you cannot control. And you've been in the business for a long time. And so I think it's important to continue to show the coach and coaching staff and the players you have confidence in them, that they can turn things around. You want to always believe that. Sometimes you have reason to believe it. Sometimes you don't. In our case, I felt our roster going into the year should have been much more competitive than it was, and I felt our coaching staff should have been much more competitive than it was, et cetera. And so I had faith and showed it and supported that. And I also looked, you know, there's no the more changes you make, you know, particularly mid-season, there's not much gain by doing that, honestly. And you look at the strength of teams and sports, really in any sport, continuity is important. Continuity is the right thing. So my decision at the end of the season was to keep Coach Quinn and keep Thomas Dimitroff, our general manager, in place because of what I saw was a different kind of performance in the second half of the season, and no reason to think there was nothing extraordinary that happened with any one player, no reason to think that that couldn't continue on into this year. And so I'm optimistic going into 2020, and my reason is I think over half the season the team played at an extraordinarily high level. I would take that record, you know, that 12-4 record, you know, if you double it almost any year and be happy with it. Yeah.
It feels too, you mentioned continuity. I agree wholeheartedly with you. I think that NFL teams that try to change too often too much find themselves, you know, you're in a constant wheel. And I would say too that, like, in the division, it looks like there could be a lot of upheaval. We don't know what Drew Brees is going to do yet.
Right, we don't know,
But the Panthers are really undergoing a lot of changes.
Right, right.
Tampa's quarterback situation is in flux.
Yep.
And if Brees leaves, it feels like there might be a lot of optimism.
Well, I mean, you know, we have to worry about ourselves. We've got to worry about our own roster. We've got to worry about winning games, et cetera. But I agree with all of those observations. They're all true. So we got to win our division. That's the most important thing in terms of getting to the playoffs and being in a position where you have a home field advantage. And then obviously, playing well throughout the playoffs, but we got to get to the playoffs. And I think that's where we feel strongly we should be this year and can be this year.
Your quarterback, Matt Ryan, got the big contract, was an MVP.
Yeah.
I'm one of the biggest defenders of him out there.
Yeah.
But yet there's this perception that maybe he's not that guy. When you hear that, what do you say?
Well, I think he is that guy. I mean, I think that Matt, you know, when you pass over 50,000 yards and you're 10th most passing yards in the history of the league, he's a consummate competitor, team leader. He's great in the fourth quarter, great when the game's on the line. I mean, the tighter the game gets, the more intense it gets, better he performs. His leadership with the players has just gotten stronger and stronger over the years. He can be firm with them. And yet, you know, he's a great face of the franchise as well. So Matt Ryan is not the reason we're not winning as often as we would like to win, for sure. So many other teams would love to have him, but we're thrilled to have Matt.
I got to ask you one thing. You're here at the Super Bowl. It's been a couple years.
Right.
Are you over what happened in that game?
Well, that was interesting. I was telling somebody earlier today, you know, probably certainly immediately after the game and maybe for the year and a half afterward, one of the things – you know, I was concerned about is I've got to set the right example for our fans, for the coaches, for the players, for my family, for my children, my grandchildren. So, you know, how do I handle adversity? How do I handle the loss? And what kind of example, role model am I going to be? This year, I think, you know, it was interesting in seeing Kyle with the success that he's had and thrilled for him that he's had it because he's earned it. I think brought back some memories that, you know, maybe a little more painful than I would have liked. Just realizing how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl, and you've been in the business much longer than I've been in the business, but I mean, how hard it is to get there and then to win is, you know, and then to have that opportunity to win with a 25-point lead, middle of the third quarter, it's really, experience that's very hard to get over. But, you know, you learn, you move on. There's no point in living in the past. There's nothing. After you learn from it, there's no point in living there. Learn for today, learn for tomorrow, and move forward. And that's what I've done.
This offseason feels like there could be some changes maybe coming in terms of rules and stuff. Is there anything that you guys as owners have looked at, maybe whether it's pass interference?
Our team president, as you both know, is Rich McKay. And Rich chairs the competition committee. He's co-chaired it or chaired it for 25 years. So what I've said to Rich, and I've said this to the commissioner as well, is that what's obvious to the fans and what's obvious to the commentators and what's obvious now to retired referees, the senior referees very often, when they're watching these games, you can't tell everybody that they're crazy and what they see is obvious is not being called. Or is being called, whatever the case may be. So I think there needs to be greater clarity and greater compatibility between what's obvious and what's seen and what's being called between the referees on the field in New York, et cetera. And the technology is there today to do that. Doesn't mean every play, but it does mean that particularly on these, you know, pass interference calls, when they're called, when they're not called, et cetera, there are significant penalties, and they make a huge difference in the game. Often it can make a huge difference in the game. So I think that that's something that just has to be what's obvious to everybody else needs to be obvious to the NFL and to its referees. And it's not because of lack of trying, but I think they're pulled in different directions, and I think that pull-push has to stop, in my opinion.
I agree. I think they need to put an eighth official on the field, too.
Yeah, well, that would only help. Yeah.
Eye in the sky, eighth official, whatever.
Both. Fix it. Both. Fix it.
We have such an investment in the players and the fans. I mean, and officiating such a big part of our game, you know, that it's a critical. You don't want, I mean, Roger often says this, we don't want to be talking about the officials after the games. Well, too often this year, we were talking about officiating after the games. And that's just not a good thing. That should stop.
One last thing. One of the things we're talking about around the league with the CBA coming up is 17 games, a 17-game season. It seems to be the players are pushing back a little bit. Do you think that gets done? Do you hope it gets done? Where are you on the 17?
Well, I think it's fine. I'm not opposed to the 17 games. I'm only opposed to it if we don't do things that'll compensate to make sure the players' health and safety is not the first consideration, because we can't be saying that it is a major consideration, the first consideration, and then do something that's not consistent with that. So whether it be, you know, less preseason games, size of the roster, whatever we have to do to make sure that the players are going to be protected, I think is critical. I think that's, to me, that's a given. Otherwise, we shouldn't be considering 17 games. But from what I understand, all those factors, and of course, the league continues to make improvements in rules, continues to make improvements in equipment. We're looking at a couple of helmets here. And the players, to their credit, are doing a better job at self-reporting, and more sensitivity to I got to go play no matter what. It's, you know what? I'm hurt. I'm concussed. I'm not seeing things exactly right. You know, someone like Carson Wentz during a playoff game when it's critical from the beginning of the game, he said, you know, I'm seeing three things instead of one, and I need to get off the field. So I think that kind of leadership is very important from a player perspective. We're seeing more and more of that.
I agree completely. Excellent points all around. Hey, we're looking forward to the Falcons this year. A lot of chance for a big season this year.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for your time, Arthur.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
I'm Will Brinson, John Breach, and we are joined now on behalf of Mountain Dew, Shaquille and Shaquem Griffin. How you guys doing?
Going good, man. Thank you for having us.
What kind of rotation, like, is this, are we deep in the rotation in terms of media hits? Like, is this are you fresh out of the box? Like, what's going on here?
I feel like we're just getting started.
Okay.
Fresh out of the box. I feel like this is just the beginning. I feel like we have a lot coming right after this one. So we're just getting started.
You guys can hang out on the set, we'll relax and chat and do some fun stuff. What's going on with the shirts? It looks like the Shining situation.
Yeah. So, man, they had a commercial here. And it's all based off The Shining and Paramount doing with
Cranston.
Yeah,
right, it's like drink Mountain Dew or I'll kill you.
Oh my goodness, he did so some amazing job on the commercial.
But it's just that good. So you know, yeah, Tracy Ellis Ross also in the commercial. So you know, and they also got the twins in The Shining. So I feel like this was a perfect fit for us to join.
Yeah,
you know, join them. So man, I feel like it was just awesome, man. I actually love the movie. So this is perfect.
Oh.
And they give the shirt.
Scary good.
Yep. And they give the shirt.
That's good.
So I definitely will be keeping the shirt as well.
And so it's Mountain Dew Zero Sugar too, which is like, we're trying to go no sugar, right? That's the plan.
No sugar, but it still got all the same taste. So, you know, that's what people look forward to. You know, you keep the same taste as the original, but no sugar.
You guys were born very close to each other. what is it? I mean, like, it's pretty insane that you guys are both doing this for a living. You made it this far. Like, we've all seen the emotional stories around the draft time, but like, you get to walk around with your brother at like your two brothers. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, my brother's like, why don't you take me to the Super Bowl? I'm like, well, you need to learn how to write or talk on camera. But like, how cool is it to get to do this together?
Definitely cheaper. Everything is literally cut in half.
But you guys split a room?
Just fly down here together?
Yeah, we actually drove.
We
split that too.
Even better. Split driving, you split the cost of eating, you split the cost of gas. Sometimes you'd be a little late sometimes and don't want to pump the gas, but you know, that's a different argument sometimes. But it makes everything easier. I know sometimes we argue about socks because you never know. You never truly know if you lost your sock or not. But he'll be the one to go take my sock because he lost one. I argue about iPhone chargers.
Oh, yeah.
It happens, man. This guy steals my battery all the time. The extra battery. He doesn't have the extra juice. It gets ugly.
My wife is like, I don't know, like, if she's an elite she's an elite iPhone charger destroyer. And if she's listening, hi, honey. Hi, Robbie. Thank you for watching. But like, she, I swear, we used to have like 10 iPhone chargers and now it's like zero. And like, the cords don't work. It's unbelievable.
This one. Yeah, I'll tell you. Really? This one. I think I had my charger long for a long time. I feel that way.
Do you guys get in brotherly, like, spats?
Oh, yeah. Kind of disagreements. Little arguments. Little disagreements. Little arguments, you know.
More like debates. Real long debate that goes over hours and no one wants to lose. That end up resulting in the same thing. We end up breaking even. We compromise and we figure out the way where it worked for both of us at the end. But the debates is really nice.
We got handed t-shirts in the middle of
it. Oh, we got our own Mountain Dew. So I might rock
there
this
we
thing.
There we
it's
go.
It's kind of fun. I like the colors.
Wait, what does it say on the back? I don't. These are awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys in the playoffs. Speaking of things you get to do, you get to split things, the cost of things. You guys split the cost of Aaron Rodgers in a playoff game. Yeah. You both sacked him at the same time. It was awesome. It was like, first of all, from like a schematic standpoint, it really showed. I think it gave the 49ers a good blueprint because you guys did the loops.
Yeah.
Where you loop back in on him, right? And like, and the right. I feel bad for the right guard. He was not prepared for what you guys were bringing that day. How fun was it to pull off a dual sack of a quarterback?
It was amazing because obviously I was looking for a sack for a long time. So just to be able to do that and not know it was my brother for like the first 5 yards, we were celebrating. No idea. Next thing you know, I look to my right and I see him doing the same exact celebration I'm doing. I said, we got to finish it strong. We have to finish it strong. So it made it that much more exciting that you didn't know until at the end of the entire play. And it's like people going crazy.
Yeah. And it's right there, and people probably thought you guys planned it, and nope, you didn't even know who was next to you.
I'm just glad we was on the same page, because we really could have messed that celebration up.
Yeah, you could have.
It was a prime time moment right there, and we finished it perfectly.
It feels like, man, you guys were, you already set the record, Seahawks set the record for most, or tied the record, excuse me, I think it was like the 78 Chiefs or somebody, for most one score wins. I mean, what kind of roller coaster was it like last year being on a team that was involved? Like, nothing was free. Nothing was easy. Yeah.
Every game's a nail biter.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Everything had your heart racing every single time. So, but after a while, you got used to it. You know, so
you kind of feel like you can win, though, right?
Yeah, always. You know, you get a team who's up, you know, on us by two touchdowns, and we're on the sideline having a casual conversation, not panicking, you know, not troubled. And that's because we've been through it so many times. We've been battle tested, and we all have that same faith and belief that we're going to find a way to win this game. And when you have the whole team doing that, after a while, those emotions, that anxiety, just, you know, your heart racing, you don't know what's going to happen. They all went away because we all believe in the same thing, that, you know, some way, somehow, we're going to figure out a way to win this game.
Now, when you see a team like the 49ers in the Super Bowl, you guys beat them in the regular season. You fell one inch short in that Week 17 game. Do you kind of look at it like, God, that could have been us?
Yep, all the time.
By the way, he spent all day yesterday reminding Scott Pioli that the Falcons lost 28-3, the league.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, yes, I get it. Yes, you keep mentioning it. I'm the GM of the team. Like, please stop it.
It's some things you don't ever forget.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of them. But, you know.
Also, that was pass interference, by the way, in the end zone. Wasn't it?
It was, but, you know, it's a tough decision on the ref, you know, and I feel like that's the main thing. They're trying to find ways to make it easier on them, but it only gets tougher. And, you know, I can only imagine, you know, the type of job that they have, you know, refereeing an intense game, like, you know, that one that we always put them through, at least for Seattle, these one-score games. And I can only imagine the calls they have to make and make sure they make the right call. So it's always tough on them. But, you know, I tip my hat off to San Fran for making it this far. You know, I always give credit when it's due.
What can the Chiefs do to slow down the 49ers run game? Because it's not only like physical and fast, but it's so complex in terms of, I think they do like 90% of their snaps, they have motion, right? They do all these, they pull their guards and they pull everybody in all different kinds of ways. How can Kansas City effectively slow that down?
So with San Fran being an outside running team, they want to bounce everything to the outside. One, I will keep everything on the inside.
Okay.
Keep everything in the inside gaps. And I feel like what is most important is everybody has to stay, you know, gap sound. Everybody have to be in their gap. You know, I feel like it's the simplest thing to do, but it's still hard because everybody is right there saying, I can make this play. Let me be the one to make this play for my team. And it's not being selfish. It's, I got it. I can do it. Let me be the one to help this team. But if everybody just play their job, stay in their gap, this game can be a lot more simpler than most people think.
All right, who do you guys think is going to win this game?
Ah, dang. Hey.
Really?
Yeah, with your division,
because San Fran's in our division, I'm going with the Chiefs. Uh-huh. And then we got Frank Clark, got some boys over there that, you know, I'm excited to see ball out. So,
yeah.
You know, Frank's seen San Fran a few times in his day.
That's right.
So this is going to be like a reunion for him.
And so, and to make it.
Frank Clark is a crazy man.
Yeah, oh yeah. And to make this equal, I'm going to go with San Fran.
Okay.
Oh, they're split. Brothers
split.
They're
going to debate it. Well, because you got to understand, I have my guy, a big brother to me, Richard Sherman, who taught me a lot of things to get me to where I am today. So I want to see him do great. He has a heck of a story to come after a torn Achilles, to go into another team and, you know, have all these doubters against him to be where he's at today and being one of the best to do it. You know, of course, I'm rocking with Richard Sherman, so I'm going with San Fran. Let's make the sequel.
We're going to take a break. We're going to get you guys out of here. The Griffin Brothers, you guys are wildly entertaining. You guys should get your own show. What do you think about that? Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Find those pockets. Hey, thanks for joining us, guys. Joined now by Jet Safety, Superstar Safety. I think you've moved into superstar status. Jamal Adams.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. I'm good. Happy to be here.
It's a very good year for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know that like the Jets probably didn't do exactly what you guys wanted in terms of team success.
Right.
But you finished strong. And like, I mean, what are you going to, like your quarterback got mono. Like that's like, that doesn't happen. Right.
Yeah. It definitely caught us off guard when, you know, Gase came in there and told us. We didn't know what to expect. Some guys didn't even know what mono was. But, you know, obviously he came back and he finished strong and we all did as a team. And we just got to stay healthy, man. That's the main thing.
Did you guys kind of rag on him for that for a couple of weeks after he got back healthy?
Yeah, I mean, he's still, you know, we give him a hard time to this day.
You get any details about how he got the kissing disease?
Man, I just told him, man, quit kissing the girl. You know, hey, man, pick and choose which ones you want to kiss, man.
So can I ask you about Sam Darnold? Yeah. So his progress, he came in as a highly drafted guy, and we saw fits and starts of how good he could be.
Yeah.
Struggled a little bit, and then people got down on him about the ghost thing with the Patriots.
Yeah.
How good can Sam Darnold be when he's laser-focused and has all the weapons around him?
Sam is going to be outstanding. Sam has improved each and every year. I've seen it from the time that, you know, he stepped in. He's going to be an outstanding quarterback. Just, you know, keep working. That's all he's going to continue to do. He doesn't complain. He puts his head down and he goes to work. If he has a bad game, that following game, he's going to continue to get better. That's what it's about, man. So I'm happy to, you know, play with him.
Okay, so you're a big guy, so I'm scared to, like, make you angry. But I do want to ask you about, like, the buzz that was happening last year. Because you're like, straight. You just straight up speak your, like, you speak your mind in a really good, forthright, honest way.
At all times.
And, like, you weren't happy that there were rumors of a possible trade. Right. Nor should you have been. It would be insane to trade you. You're really good at your job.
Right.
Where did things stand on that, and did everything get aired out on it?
Yeah, everything's good. Obviously, you know, had a great talk with Joe. Mr. Woody and, you know, Mr. Johnson, all of those guys had great talks. And, you know, at the end of the day, man, it was about, you know, respect. That was my thing.
Right.
Everything was about respect. You know, we could have had better communication between, you know, Joe Douglas and I. But everything's good, man. We squashed it. We're good.
Well, let me ask you this kind of on that note. Jamal, you're probably one of the best NFL players to follow on Twitter. Because you do speak your mind. I think you got in a spat with Derek Carr's brother once, so you're not the only one, Brinson.
I didn't see that because I'm actually blocked by all three.
Brinson does that regularly, so don't be shy. Do you like Twitter because you can be so unfiltered and get, you know, your message out to the fans?
I mean, you know, social media, period, man, is about just being yourself, right?
Yeah.
You know, obviously I look back on it, I shouldn't even entertain them. But when you kind of cross the line of a code, you violate code, you know, I kind of snap back, and I'm going to say what I want to say. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, I don't have any bad blood with anybody, man. It's all love. It's all love and respect, man.
I think we also – Ryan had mentioned the Rihanna tweet. I think we actually have the tweet that we can show up there. If we put
we have
up,
Rihanna right back there. Oh, no.
did you hear back from her?
Ah, man, but that tweet, it was booming, man. I didn't know it was going to get a lot of, you know, traction. But I'm kind of waiting on to hear back. Hopefully I run into her. So, you know, my time is coming.
Well, the funny thing is that tweet blew up. If you're going to shoot your shot, then you do it on Twitter. 100%. And all of a sudden that thing was everywhere.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to blow up like that. But, hey, it did. And hopefully she's seen it, man. That's the main thing, just to get into the door.
So you have been to the Pro Bowl twice.
Yeah.
First team All-Pro in 2019.
Yeah.
You've played 3 years in the NFL now. That means you're eligible for a new contract.
Correct.
Do you think that you will get a new contract this offseason? And if not, should you get a new contract?
I think I should be extended. I think that, you know, for my status and what I've done for the organization, I've done everything right. Everything they've asked me to do, I've done it at a high level. You know, and I've proven year in, year out that I'm the best safety player in the game right now. So very diverse in what I can do. I can do everything on the field. And, you know, hopefully they extend me. That's the plan. That's the plan.
So – I know the answer to this question I'm going to ask you because there's a conversation during the fall about DBU, Ohio State, Florida,
come on,
LSU.
Come on.
What makes LSU such a great
– First of all, why is Florida even stepping in here? What's happening with
I don't
this
know.
Florida business?
I have no idea. I play with two guys, Marcus May and Brian Poole, and I don't understand. I don't understand why they get in the conversation. They would get mad at me right now, man, and we'll go back and forth. So
what makes LSU such a great place to cultivate these defensive backs who come to the NFL and dominate?
I think it's just the mentality, man, that we play with and we're kind of raised to play with. You know, that place is a very special place. You know, LSU made me who I am today, mentally, physically, the player I am. Just being around the coaching staff, being around guys that could – being an NFL coach and that impact kids' lives on and off the field, that's what it's about. So And, you know, at the end of the day, we are DBU. It's never going to change. The track record speaks for itself.
Is Florida even third in your DBU list?
I don't even talk about Florida, man.
I really don't understand it.
I don't bring up Texas, Ohio State. I don't bring up none of them, man. It's just not even close. It's not close.
You guys played the Bills the opening week. I think you had 16-0. Was it frustrating seeing them make the postseason? Was there kind of a sense like, hey, that could have been us?
Yeah, 100%. You know what I mean? Obviously, you know, blowing that lead wasn't ideal. Golly, that was a big game. It was a big turnaround as far as energy, momentum. Who would have thought Sam would go down with mono after that?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, he was playing with mono the week one. Wasn't feeling good, so. Through all the adversity, man, it was just crazy. You look back on certain games that you expect to win and you should win, but we didn't get it done. And if you don't get it done, that you're not going to be in the postseason.
You feel like this team now has some consistency going into, you know, and that hadn't been a thing in New York for a while, right? Like you got consistency on both sides of the ball. I mean, you lose a guy like Leonard Williams in the trade. I think he's going to end up being a free agent though, and get a chance to explore. But you got nice. Robbie Anderson might check out the market as he should.
Right.
But you guys have nice pieces on both sides of the ball.
Right.
How good can this team be next year?
I mean, man, you just got to keep bringing in certain players, man, that we need to fill these holes and. Obviously, we need to protect Sam more. Obviously, we need to get better all around, front, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. We need to get better, period. We need to bring guys in. We need to bring some big names in and hopefully turn this thing around. Simple as that.
So it feels like, well, this has been the case. The Patriots and Tom Brady have been atop the AFC East for almost, it feels like forever.
Right.
Number one, would you be okay if Tom Brady left New England?
Oh, man, it don't bother me, man. At the end of the day, man, it would definitely, you know, help us. Happy that if he wasn't there in our division. But I have so much respect for him.
Yeah.
But I agree that I think he should take his time and look for different opportunities, man, to get his worth. He's done everything they've asked him to do. He doesn't complain about
money. Below market value, too.
Yeah, I mean, he gets paid, you know, very low. He should be the highest paid in the league, period. For what he's done, championships to MVP. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's the best doing it. So,
but you would feel okay going into 2020 if the Jets didn't have to worry about seeing him twice a year.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, that's you'd be crazy if I'd be crazy if I said right. I wouldn't. You know what I mean? So, it's gonna be interesting to see where he's gonna land, man.
How do you think this? We'll weave these two together. It's a two-part question. One, because this is the 100th anniversary of the NFL, as noted by your extremely cool
beautiful
new hat. Era hat
yeah,
here.
For sure.
So this is a commemorative spot the new era is doing. You can see this feels like it's very heavy.
It is.
It's an actual football.
Yep. Leather.
You got the leather. You got some
I don't know. The 100th season patch.
Some bling.
A nice little W on here for the Duke.
Yeah, for the Wilson, man.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful hat, man.
Yeah.
We collab with Wilson, obviously. Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, he's a Wilson. Ryan Wilson.
We collab with him and you know, we made a beautiful hat. I this is my first time seeing it in person, and I think it's a very nice hat. Can go with a lot of things. Obviously, I got lucky, man, today. And
yeah, that is a nice look.
It
all matches.
Matches my fit a little bit. So
well, so the big cool. we got the Super Bowl coming, and they're celebrating the anniversary at New Era. I'm curious how you think this game plays out. And there's some really interesting defensive backs in it as well, like Richard Sherman, of course, one of the greatest.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Honey Badger,
right?
Your LSU boy,
right?
How are they going to slow down San Francisco? And do you think he can be the type of guy who flips this game?
Yeah, it's gonna be a great game. Put it like that. San Fran's D-line is going to play a big part in this game if they can slow down Pat, because obviously he can scramble and whatnot. And, you know, Pat and his team, they got some explosive weapons, put it like that. They can score anytime they want to. But, you know, it's going to be a real good matchup, man. I'm looking forward to seeing San Fran's defense go against the offense. I think that's the matchup I want to see. So I'm looking forward to it.
Who wins?
I don't know, man. I got boys, close friends on both sides. I can't even pick.
They're gonna yell at me in my ear until I get a pick from you.
Yeah, man. I don't know, man. Honestly, it's gonna be a good game.
You're wearing red, you're wearing yellow.
I think it's gonna, you know, the best two teams are playing right now. Obviously, it's gonna be a hell of a matchup, man. I'm looking forward to it.
You did a good job escaping that. All right, that's Jamal Adams, one of the best safeties in the game. This is like 2 years in a row now where they've decided to let us sit up here for an hour and talk about football and interview big-time celebrities like Tariq Cohen, myself, Will Brinson here, John Breach, Ryan Wilson, and as we mentioned, Tariq Cohen. We're down here in Miami at Super Bowl 54 LIV. Tariq, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This is – Is this Super Bowl like number two for you, like in terms of making the big
three?
You've done a full tour three times.
Yeah,
that's a lot of media hits. What do you think about it?
It's a lot, like you said, but I feel like when it gets routine, when you get in the flow of things, you get going.
What how do you think next year is going to look in terms of, you know, your usage? Because I think to me, you're so unique as a player, a guy like, because in college you ran between the tackles a ton.
Yeah.
And like, you, how many carries you had? Like 1,500 carries?
Dude? I don't even know.
It was a lot, dude. But like, when you get you in space, so dynamic and explosive. Do you think there'll be an emphasis on doing that more next year as try to open up the offense?
Oh yeah, I think so. Definitely. I didn't have the season I wanted this year, so I feel like, you know, that's going to be a main thing to incorporate next year, you know, me getting the ball more in open space. And that's why I got to, you know, grind harder this offseason than ever before.
Well, you guys let go of Mark Helfrich this offseason, hired Bill Lazor. Have you got a chance to talk to him and kind of what his vision is for you in the offense?
No, I haven't met him yet. So I'm really looking forward to that, to see what he thinks about me and to see how, you know, he wants me to play this year.
So to talk about the offense, what do you guys need to do differently going forward? Because the offensive, I don't know if it's the offensive line, but the running game wasn't 2019 what we saw in 2018. And then it's you and David Montgomery. How are you guys going to work together looking ahead to 2020?
We're definitely going to try to, you know, get that on the roll earlier this season than what we did last year. We felt like we didn't have identity for the main part of the season, and that's what prohibited our offense from, you know, being a good offense. So when we get that going, the run game opens up everything else.
So Mitchell Trubisky catches a little bit of flack out there in the public. Like the Chicago newspapers got on him all before the season. Do you think he's capable of taking a big leap forward in 2020?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel like he's already, you know, the type of quarterback that we need to make it to the big game. You know, just the record travels with the coach and the quarterback. And, you know, no matter what they do, it's always going to travel with them. It could be the other players making the mistakes, but, you know, it's always going to come down to the quarterback. Hmm.
Do you feel like he's gotten better each season? Like, is it noticeable improvement to you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can tell by, you know, the onside adjustments, at the line of scrimmage adjustments when he can't hear Coach Nagy, him just doing things on instinct, and just his overall knowledge about the game.
So you're from Bunn, North Carolina. I'm from Buies Creek, North Carolina. He's from Raleigh, North Carolina. Don't worry about where John's.
I traveled to North Carolina.
Is Bunn 910 or 919?
919.
Yes, we had 919 in the house.
Yeah,
that's right. All 919 back in the day. You went to A&T?
Yep.
NCAA&T.
Yeah.
So what was that transition going from that? You got drafted fourth round?
Yeah.
To the NFL and seeing guys you've been watching just a year before, because you made that transition overnight. How did you do that? Because I would imagine at some point you're like, I know that guy from television.
Yeah, it was still crazy, you know, playing against the guys that you was fans of. Like in the preseason, I played against Tyrann Mathieu, big fan of him, and then it was like, dang, I'm playing against the Honey Badger now. Like, so it was still like culture shock, but then, you know, he's like, Honey Badger gonna knock my head off if I don't come out here and play football. So you get adjusted quick.
So last week I was at the Senior Bowl, and sometimes you see players from smaller schools overwhelmed. How did you overcome being overwhelmed in that moment and just started playing right away?
I feel like it was my competitive nature. You know, I wanted to be the best no matter where I came from. So I was like, yeah, I got to show them who I am. So I'm going to just get out there and play my hardest.
Was there a spot where maybe your rookie year you got out on the practice field and you're like, all right, I can definitely compete with these guys. That's not going to be an issue.
It was that game that I played against the Cardinals. The running back in front of me, Jordan Howard, had got poked in his eye, so he didn't travel to the game, and I had to start. And that's usually the first quarter, like the first two series, is when the ones are playing from both teams. So I got a little taste of the ones for the Cardinals, and I did good, so I knew I could play then.
Hey, when you look at this Super Bowl matchup, like, you know, there's so many different, like, which is the 49ers defense that much better, you think, than the Chiefs defense when you look at it? Because I think the Chiefs are underrated. Like, Chris Jones, Frank Clark, guys who can stop the run. And then, like you mentioned, Honey Badger, that dude flies around and he lays wood on people. How do you think it's maybe a little bit closer than people believe, or are the 49ers that much better?
Yeah, I feel like the 49ers have a great defense, but that's not to say that the Chiefs have a bad defense. Like, they're good also. And it's going to be a fun game to watch.
What if you're the Chiefs defense, how would you go about trying to stop that Kyle Shanahan running game? Like, what, because you see so many intricate, like, moves with their offensive line. Raheem Mostert, so explosive. Is there any way that they can do that from like a schematic standpoint or a tactical standpoint? Like, what makes it hard for you when you see a defensive approach like that?
I really feel like it's going to come down to the players more than the scheme. I feel like it's going to have to be, you know, them just coming with it and just bringing it to the O-line and to the tight ends. You know, you can't let George Kittle get a hold of you. We've seen how good of a blocking tight end he's been. So I feel like it's just going to be the attitude.
You guys got to play the Chiefs toward the end of the season, yeah. And that was actually one of their best defensive performances of the season. Yeah. And I think that's kind of maybe people are overlooking that aspect of their team because, you know, Patrick Mahomes' offense get all the headlines. What was your take on playing their defense, you know, at week 16, I think it was?
I feel like their defense is just all about momentum. You know, when they get that first three and out, it's really contagious. You can see them flying around the field, and everybody wants to be the next guy to make a play. And, you know, they're led by Tyrann Mathieu, who's just the soul of that defense, and he just got that big dog mentality about him. And when you spread that around, you know, anything is possible.
So how critical is it to have that defense you can lean on like the 49ers have? Because last year, the Bears defense was the best defense in the league and helped you guys, obviously, get through that season. When the defense isn't on point every single play, that puts more pressure on the offense. Is that something that the 49ers can lean on, or is this going to have to be something where Garoppolo takes over at some point?
I feel like some games, you know, you can lean on that defense, but it's going to come a time where your offense has to step up. And I feel like the 49ers has the type of offense that's, you know, been able to step up. And I feel like Jimmy G is definitely capable of that.
All right, well, so who do you think is actually going to come out and win this game?
I play offense, so I want it to be a shootout.
Yeah.
And then I like the weapons that the Chiefs have, so I'm going for the Chiefs to win.
All right, and tell us, you got you do a little work with Polaris Slingshot.
Oh, yeah.
While you're down here at the Super Bowl. What's going on with that?
I've been driving the new 2020 Slingshot.
That's a really good endorsement, by the way. Yeah. That's a fun endorsement.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Any speed demon would definitely want to get his hands on one. you know, it's an automatic transmission now. Previously, it was only standard transmission.
Oh, really?
Yeah, now it's automatic. Anybody
so
can
now
drive
you,
it.
Now you can drive it.
I can't drive standard, so yeah, I'm happy
I learned
to hear
it one day on YouTube. So so it was easy. But, yeah, people can also enter, you know, for a chance to win one. Go to PolarisSlingshot.com, and you enter It's Automatic, and you automatically put yourself in sweepstakes.
That's awesome.
Are we eligible? I might sign up.
Are we eligible, or since we talked to you, we're not eligible?
I think you definitely are eligible. I don't know how many times the limit is either, or how many times you can
really?
Go in that sweepstakes.
I can make a bunch of email accounts. I'm going to sign up a few times.
Hey, let me ask you this. So, like, with are there any, like, other players you see? I don't want to use a pejorative term like a gadget player, like, because I think that it gets used around the NFL when people talk about like you or Tyreek Hill, because like if you're not a big traditional, you know, running back like a Derrick Henry, but you guys are so explosive in space. Who else really kind of fits that mold as like a modern, because to me it's like, and Pete Prisco coined the term airback, but it's like this modern NFL approach where you can catch the ball. You're so dangerous running routes. Like, do you see like a Taysom Hill guy being like the next level of that because he can throw the ball? Are there any other guys that come to mind?
I feel like definitely, like you said, Taysom Hill, you know, the many things he can do, he's out there blocking punts, and then next thing you know, he's throwing a touchdown. So it's just crazy, and I feel like it's a lot of players that can do that, and I feel like the way the league's shaping up now, you're going to start seeing more players, like, just doing more things than just one position. For example, like, offensive lineman catching touchdowns, so you never know what's going to happen.
That's right. All right, Tariq Cohen, thank you so much for joining us, buddy. Best of luck. Looking forward to seeing you next year, 919.
Oh, yeah.
In the house, man.
Appreciate you.
All right.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.